That's pianist Jack Wilson and his quartet featuring Roy Ayers on vibes with Ramblin'. It's the title track of their 1966 album with Monk Montgomery on bass and Varner Ballo on drums, completing the quartet. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and today, word from Syria that President Bashar al-Assad has claimed or is claiming victory in Aleppo, but the war is far from over. And many questions, many questions abound. We aren't going to be tackling that today. It's a very complicated situation. And more information is needed. So the main thing is that fierce battle has, according to President Assad, has produced a victory in one of the main cities where a collection of combatants were fighting against his government. And he says that they have taken hold of the city finally and will proceed next to claim a thorough victory. There are still pockets of resistance there, but at least he says there has been some kind of victory. Now, you know, in war, there's never a victory. There is just no such thing as a victory. Really horrible things happen on all sides. And that is why there should be such a strong effort to avoid war. But sometimes it happens that it just descends on a country as a result of a number of arrangements that are not apparent to the eye. And we referenced that yesterday, talking about the situation in the United States with this tone developing, basically kind of calling for war based on the assertion that Donald Trump was aided in his victory by Russia, and that Russia had interfered in the political process of the United States. So, you know, these kinds of specious things, they seem very, you know, somebody says something, or a country makes an allegation, or a political party, or an influential person, without proof of any sort, and it takes on a life of its own. And soon you have people like John McCain saying, you know, this presumed action by Russia is an act of war. We know what that means. That he is, in fact, urging the United States to take a position, a defense position, which is war. So these calls for war and the egging on through propaganda, through false claims, through all kinds of insidious means to persuade, because this is the major part of it, to persuade the people that there is justification for all these atrocities that are to come. In the case of Syria, this has been going on now at full throttle for 6 years. The displacement of hundreds of thousands of people, the killing of hundreds of thousands of people, the atrocities that are committed. And you have now, it is not, you know, war used to be a two-sided thing. You know, there's party A and there's party B. But in the case of Syria, you have about six major actors, all of them having different agendas. And They all agree, let's fight to the death. And they're not just saying this. They are organized and they are hell-bent to achieve that aim. Poor people, the people who live there, have nothing to do with it, have no way of influencing anything. They don't have guns and bombs, and they're just trying to live from day to day. And that's the effect of war. We saw that in Vietnam. We saw that in all wars, really. In the end, it's the people who suffer. The people who suffer. Their sons and daughters are dragged into some of the most preposterous positions as combatants. All kinds of atrocities occur because there is more than meets the eye. So when we see these things bubbling as they are now in the United States around this supposed claim, it could be true. I would grant that. There's always a possibility that these things can be true. But the people who are interested in moving an entire country in the direction of war won't wait to find out if it's true. It's immaterial, in fact, even if it's true or even if it's false. They don't care. They just want to have a war. And let's say in this particular situation in the United States, which is we have forces pushing for aggression and eventual war, their sons and daughters aren't going to be dying. Their sons and daughters aren't going to be picking up rifles and jumping out of helicopters into the bushes to fight. No. Their sons and daughters will report for their work at very well placed in corporations and far away from the cruelty of war. But their fathers and uncles and mentors and people who they are well connected to will protect them from having to pay any price for the casual decision to go to war, and for reasons that only they know. We have to be very, very careful about it. So that's today's big world news that Bashar al-Assad of Syria has reclaimed the main city of Aleppo and now is moving troops to do the same in Palmyra, where the collection of combatants against his regime seem to have taken over and still remain very much in charge. War is such an awful thing. And there's no winning. There is no winning. And these folks are beyond the point of reason. They're beyond the point of acting rationally. Now, I readily subscribe to the idea that there are instances in which you can't help but fight because literally you're being attacked. And the intent is to kill the leader and to kill as many other people as possible. It's not a fair fight in any way. It is you're fighting really to defend yourself. Your country is being invaded. That's not your fault. And there's no way to ameliorate the situation. You have to go to war. These are the awful choices that have to be made when war, the prospect of war, is a reality. Well, I thought I would make a little note of that today. We'll come back to the subject because it is very, very complicated. And it deserves a lot of time. It cannot be done in just one program. So rather than start something that we can't finish in an hour, we will come back to it in a series so we could lay out the whole thing. How did this develop? Who is fighting whom and why? The interference, which was the word we talked about yesterday, here is a perfect example of how interference by other world powers to achieve agendas of their own, how it could escalate things to the point of an Armageddon. But all along, it's the people who pay the price. Well, yesterday was the day that all 50 states and the District of Columbia must confirm the presidential election vote in their respective jurisdictions and the names of electors for each candidate who will be participating in the Electoral College vote on December 19th. That vote will, of course, officially select the president and the vice president of the United States. Let me pause here for a minute. This makes no sense. It was a method that was concocted all the way back in the 1800s. But you see, again, you have to be always in touch with the subjects that we cover. This was devised as what is my favorite word? System. It's a system. So that the people will not be trusted because they can't. These are very complex decisions, and we can't manage these decisions by ourselves. We can't be trusted to make sound decisions as to who the president and vice president would be. So they put in this system that the people will elect electors, and the electors will handle the job. The people cannot and will not be permitted to elect their own president and their own vice president for themselves. Another anomaly of American democracy. But that's the rules, as they say, Dems the rules that they set in motion. And according to the rules, yesterday was the day that the states were supposed to certify the official vote in each state. I want to make another point right here. I keep diverting, but, you know, this is how my mind works sometimes. It applies to the 50 states and the District of Columbia. What's wrong with that phrase? And it's a long-standing problem that I've talked about it so many times, that the District of Columbia continues to be denied its constitutional rights. It has no representation. And this was one of the things that you would say, well, some enterprising effort by the Democrats, since it's overwhelmingly Democratic, that should be a top item on the menu, also for the Green Party. Statehood for Washington, D.C. Now, there is a prime example of taxation without representation. There are more people, if the whole idea of a state being declared or a state being formed on the basis of population, Washington, D.C. has more people than the state of Rhode Island. And yet it has no vote in Congress and is administered by Congress. It is not a self-governing entity. And that is something that is long overdue to be remedied. Anyway, I get back to my point. The Electoral College votes on December the 19th. The results of each of the individual states and the District of Columbia were submitted yesterday and authenticated yesterday. And as you know, that comes after a fierce effort by various parties to persuade or to allow this process to come to an entirely different outcome. We have Hillary Clinton hell-bent, still hell-bent on claiming what she believes to be her rightful prize. And she said yesterday, she's never going to give up. Never going to give up. Well, it explains an attitude. It explains an attitude consistent with imperialism, consistent with this notion of entitlement. You lost the race. But yet there seems to be nobody in the Democratic Party who can tell this woman, look, you lost. Be as gracious as possible, because things down the road will require help for you. And you should try to kind of be as graceful as possible in your loss. You had some pretty sizable mistakes that were made, and you lost the election. Despite, on the other side, you know, we're not discussing here how the elections, including the primaries, were fixed, and how the Democratic Party itself sabotaged the process by killing off the prospect of any competition for Hillary Clinton within the Democratic community. The cannibalization of Bernie Sanders and his movement, and subjugating him into becoming a very quiet about it, to accept his defeat very quietly. In the case, it was so clear that the Democratic Party basically cleared the path, as it had for Hillary Clinton's Senate race. She had absolutely no qualifications to run in New York State as a senator. But that was what was arranged, and they made it happen. And, of course, it was very important as a demonstration of her political progress, so that in running for office, public office, she can claim and she can tell people of how she proceeded up the ladder. She had absolutely no qualifications whatsoever. They made it happen. They made it happen. No other person was permitted to submit any notice at all that they were interested in running for the U.S. Senate from New York. And miraculously, someone who never lived in New York became senator from New York. It's not questioned. It means that there's collusion. The party's corrupt, irredeemably corrupt. And even in this election, it countenanced a lot of irregularities having to do with the outcome of the votes in all these different states where she performed or appeared to have performed spectacularly. It was arranged. We shared here on this program tapes of people making, the people who were there as delegates this whole question of the delegate and superdelegate process that gave her the nomination, it was organized. So there's no need to put any currency into her claim about interference from the Russians. Now, look to your own party and the practices of your party and you, and you will see why. At some point, you got what was coming to you. And still, Hillary is vowing she is not giving up. What does that mean? What does it mean you're not giving up? Is this your personal process? Is this, you know, in politics, one could assume that you will have, you know, somebody running against you. But to openly express this mentality that this is what I'm supposed to have, I'm going to have it, and you better give it to me. And you shroud it up with a lot of other stuff. You know, I'm a woman, hear me raw kind of thing. I have had, look at the, how many offices I've held. All of them, of course, given to her. And used to basically attain the major goal that she wants, which is the major goal that everybody running for president wants. They want to win. But here you have a race concluded, and you are still insisting you couldn't have lost without some kind of organized effort against you. And just on that claim, you can cause all of this havoc and will continue to cause havoc because you lost. And there appears to be nobody within the Democratic Party to say, listen, it really isn't all about you. You ran a race, you lost the race. We must move on. They have not been able to do that. So we still have Hillary Clinton, even as the process goes toward the formal effort, whatever it is you want to think about it. You see, this is my point. It is not about a personal thing. This is how it works. Everybody did some shady stuff, I'm imagining, because that's the history of U.S. politics. And so you have to be all grown up in order to participate in this process and take your lumps. But her anger is clearly linked to the expectation that everything was in place to cause her to win. That is another way of saying it was an arranged win. What does that mean? You get, you know, these black preachers to sell out and become proselytizers for the Democratic Party. You make false promises. You get the media to cover up all of the things that would make anybody with a ticking brain say, you're not the one. So you had everything working for you because it was all arranged. Well, sometimes you have to expect that there are people who are smarter than you are. And despite the fact that you have everything arranged, they understood the system. They understood the system better than you. And that knowledge allowed them to put into place strategies that allowed them in turn to win. End of story. So slink off someplace quiet and try to get in touch with what really happened to you and what it's supposed to mean. But that's not the Clinton way. And we find ourselves also with the Green Party, who opened the door. They cannot escape that responsibility here. They opened the door for the whole scenario to now pivot around Hillary Clinton's claims about Russia. Whether they were willing partners in this, or whether they were co-opted, or whether they were just outsmarted into doing something rather stupid. But they can't get away from the fact that they opened the door when they had no business, nothing to gain from taking the action that they did. So what this means with the submission of the certificates by the 50 states and the District of Columbia is that that effort is completely and totally dead. So in addition to all of this, we have proof now, except it's not the kind of proof that they wanted. And the Green Party is busy now having to recoup anything that is left of their credibility. And this is what I was talking about in the beginning, from the very beginning. This is not your fight. Don't get involved. Leave it alone and stay the course with what it is you're supposed to be doing, which is building your party and building organizations and affiliations that could support your party. So in hindsight, we can see what an awful waste it was. And Jill Stein, I mean, just yesterday, not a news conference, but a kind of call, I guess. Yours truly was not notified, but I'm used to it now. But they called this conference call to the media because it realizes it has done something pretty stupid. And now they have to live with the result of it, which is a fractured party. There are people who were against it who apparently were not listened to. There are people who said, don't do this recount. It has nothing to do with us. We don't have standing. Anybody could tell you that you don't have standing here. You have to deal with what is the consequence that could come to you from doing something, you know, this serious. And this is the other part. This is what's scary. This is a very serious thing, so casually and so suddenly. And now it causes people to ask questions. How did this come about? How did it come about? We can't avoid it. We have to look at it, and we have to get some answers. So now, with all three states shutting down their recount, under the direct orders of various courts, and with them going into this whole thing saying that the reason for demanding a recount is that they want to protect the integrity of the vote. And nobody was in a position to explain to anybody in charge at the Green Party, apparently, what they believe to be a simple request actually is. I talked about systems all the time. When you use the word recount, let me explain what you are actually saying. When you say, as a political party, you're demanding a recount, It means that you have participated in an election, and you have reason to believe, not just reason, you have evidence that you were harmed in one way or the other. The party was harmed in one way or the other by this and that and the other. The reasons, and you have evidence. But understand very well the way systems work. When you are undertaking or you are asking for a recount, what you are saying to the system and what you are conveying to the world at large about the system is that the system is not to be trusted. Something horrible went on here, some shenanigans, and you are calling the system to account. That's not a casual thing. You are indicting the system. This is how they read it. You are indicting the governor. You're indicting the Board of Elections. You're indicting the Election Commission. You're indicting all of these other systems. And they're not going to take that lying down. Especially when it was done on a whim. It's like saying, that Joe, he's a pedophile. And you just flippantly say something like that. And you move on, you think. Leaving that kind of a brand on Joe. And then later you would say, well, you know, we thought, we didn't think it would work out that way. We didn't think people would read it that way. See, when you're grown up, you begin to understand that there's a direct connection between what you do and how people perceive it. So in each instance, with these recounts, that was what was happening. The entire state apparatus was put on notice and publicly condemned, essentially, even though the party says it was doing this in the public interest. But you have no evidence. You didn't care to come into this with evidence, which is the responsible thing to do and the logical thing and the correct thing to do. You just, you know, we have reason to believe. And the reason for the recount is not to address the specific complaints that you have. In fact, you have no complaint. And this is supposed to be deemed as responsible behavior. You have no complaint, you have no evidence. And you have not, as a party, you have no interest. You have no particular interest in this case for the party. You instead are going for the broad picture here of saying, we're doing this in the interest of the American voter. And worse, you have no standing. All of these things are indications of gross irresponsibility and very poor judgment. And your whole party is dragged into it. Remember, I just talked about Aleppo and Syria. A whole community of attackers is after Assad. So he has been having to fight for 6 years against a group who have a shared interest in Syria's demise, and particularly his demise. I'm not saying I support any of this at all. I'm telling you how things work out. But in this case, here, and we have to study it because there's a big lesson to be learned here. All of this is done for Hillary Clinton's advantage. She suddenly comes out of the woodwork. The Green Party opens the door to let her back in, to give her legitimacy, and in fact, to give her added force to her non-argument that Russia caused her to lose the election because it actively supported Trump's campaign. Again, what do they have in common? Absolutely no evidence. They have absolutely no evidence. The only difference here is that Hillary Clinton is making this case for herself. All she needs, though, and she is getting that through a sympathetic media, is something that approximates, or it looks to approximate, a rational cause, a rational complaint, although she has filed no complaint. She also has filed no complaint. We have two women. Two very progressive women engaging in this kind of shoddy political activity. Are these examples of good political leadership? I don't think so. You playing the boys' rules. And you have no problem with it as to where the chips fall. Because as long as it doesn't fall on you, everything is okay. But yesterday's conference call was an attempt by the Green Party to regain some kind of credibility, because it now is beginning to recast its previous position, which somebody must have said, look, you know, we're in trouble. You're raising money, so it looks like you're adopting all of the wrong. You're adopting all of the wrong influences from the system and making it look like it is something else. But in the end, there's so much of a correlation. You can't help but see the similarities in conduct and the similarities in the agenda. In the same way that Hillary is not listening, she hasn't been listening for a long, long time, because she believes strongly that her brand, if for lack of a better term, her brand is so strong as a fighting woman and a champion for rights and all of that stuff, that no matter what she does, there's a way to clean it up with the support and still have the support of the people. You take the Clinton Foundation, stone cold organized crime at a level not seen in the world. We're not talking a couple of dollars. Charles Wartell told us that in all, considering all of the derivatives of their criminal enterprise, we're talking trillions of dollars in illegal activity. And still, she is out there smiling and people are crying when they meet her. That, and in sympathy that she lost. You have with the Green Party, you have, and I'm troubled by it, obviously, because I've talked about it quite a bit. And what is troubling to me is the abuse of trust and the abuse of power. And we should be worried about these things, since the Green Party presents itself, and I still believe that it has great potential to be a voice, a genuine voice. But it is showing us in so many ways that it is comfortable in adopting the horrid practices of the system and making us believe, making the public believe, that criticism is out of the question. It would come only from those people who are working against it. But that's not the truth. I maintain and have maintained that we desperately need effective third parties. We desperately need them. Nobody wants to see a viable movement cave in and implode precisely at a time when we are experiencing all these crises that require, as a response, a well-organized community and a well-organized vehicle. That was what was so disappointing. I go back to Jesse Jackson. And the minute I saw it, I said, no, he's a charlatan. He is not to be supported. But did anybody listen? I got attacked. Viciously attacked. And up to now, I get people saying to me, wow, we didn't see that. We didn't hear what you were saying. Bernie Sanders, same thing. I warned months and months ahead of the time that this thing happened with Bernie. I said, watch this guy. You got to watch him. And then later on, I said, the Sanders movement must prepare for betrayal. I said that. What do you know? He betrayed them. I also said the first thing that they needed to do was to fire Sanders for that betrayal. That atrocious act that he committed. You have to call a news conference. You thank him for his contribution, and, you know, you do it the way corporate America does it. They fire the executives by giving them a big dinner. They thank that person for doing such good things to advance the company and its profitability and whatever else they want to throw in there. They give him a watch, but he's gone. He no longer has any connection to that company. He's gone. What do we see? We see Bernie Sanders still operating, not as an independent, not as a democratic socialist, but he's the Democratic Party's outreach specialist, having performed the service of betrayal, endorsing Hillary Clinton and vowing to do everything he could do to get her elected. And that is the abuse of power I'm talking about. No individual in a party has the authority to usurp the consensus of a party and then do these kinds of outrageous and atrocious things in the name of the party. So that news conference, that teleconference that was held yesterday, and by the way, it really didn't involve the black press or, it didn't involve that. But the party is now wounded. It has really teed off, certainly in Wisconsin and in Pennsylvania and in Michigan. It has teed off these states, and by extension, going into this business of systems, by extension, it has teed off the entire United States with its recount, its frivolous recount action. It has teed off the court. Sure, you got a lot of news coverage, but not the right kind. You have succeeded in having the media portray it, what they're seeing, a lunatic fringe reborn. People who are totally out of touch with the way the world really works. And who have no problem causing the states, this is where the irresponsibility comes in, you're causing, the recount is expensive for the states. You share a cost in the recount, but you bring a recount late, a recount action late in the game. We know that there is a deadline. This is what we were talking about earlier. The deadline was yesterday to have these things certified. But you want hand counts of ballots. You can see the fine, you can see the fine assistance of Hillary Clinton in here. Do everything possible to disrupt Donald Trump. You go after states where he won, but by a narrow enough margin that can be contested if the count works in a particular way. You got barely 1% in all three states. The party was not even filing a complaint. It has no complaint, but it is just a request. We want a recount. Why? Because you have barely 1% in each of the states, and you expect a logical court to take seriously your contention that with this recount, you will miraculously go over this hurdle, and your 1% will miraculously become 20, 30, 40, 50, 60% of the vote. Nobody could see that there's an undercurrent here of shadiness, and they should question this. And the people doing this in behalf, supposedly, of the Green Party, in the name of the Green Party, have no problem tinkering with the image, people call it the brand if they want, of the party. So that if somebody should become the leader of the party, let's say the next go round, they not only have to struggle through the normal things that are associated with running an election, they also have to be clear that they are working at a disadvantage caused by the previous candidate and the party. They now have to fight for the reputation of the party on top of waging a credible campaign. They have to eat the consequences of your mistakes, whether they were deliberate or not. They should have been avoided in order to make it easy the next time you run, or anybody else runs, under the party's banner. So this act was also an act of, egotism. recklessness and egotism. And it set the party back many, many years. So when these things happen, we have to make these connections. And it is not because you have some kind of animus against the party. You know, frankly, I couldn't care what a party chooses to do. I'm not involved. I'm not affiliated with any party precisely because of this. I will be tempted to affiliate or support a party that looks like they're serious and not in the habit of making these disastrous, impetuous mistakes that only confirm that the party's not ready. You're not ready. I can't support that. And these questions about motivation for actions, they have to be addressed. Because now it has to be recognized that the party is trying. It is trying through these efforts to address the question of its conduct by, specifically by Jill Stein, but as a party also. Because it shows that nobody can have a level of input that is respected within the party and that would lead to consensus of opinion about the party. So don't blame people when they move even further away or don't come to you at all. This recount debacle, in my view, was just lethal. It was unnecessary, and it was just plain stupid. We need to have institutions we can believe in. To quote Jill Stein, we need to have institutions we can believe in. And this recount effort and other things show that the party is in disarray. It has great potential, and it is desperately needed. Desperately needed. All the more so because of what I know is coming down the pike. But right now, it has joined the collection of entities that are not serious, that have other agendas going, but are nonetheless predicated on support from the people. I say again, the party owes the people not only an apology, but an explanation for its conduct. It cannot avoid it. If it intends to be relevant, and if it intends to be a genuine vehicle for change, a place where people who have major concerns and want to do the right thing in politics, where they can lend their effort and their money and their time and their belief, their credibility. So a party that would not betray this. All right. Thank you so much for allowing me to vent a little bit and for allowing me to kind of lay out these thoughts, because they're very, very much in my mind. Coming up next, stay tuned, the NDC Savings Club. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you think about this program. And we'll see each other tomorrow. Thanks a lot. A pleasure and a great privilege, of course, to be in your esteemed company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.